I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, has the religious right lost its way? Two prominent evangelical leaders talk faith and politics, and the barbershop guys shape up the week's news. But first, we have an update on a feud playing out in Latin America. Earlier this week, President Bush made an urgent plea to Congress to pass a free trade agreement with Colombia. But as his remarks to the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday made clear, he sees the issue as having far greater repercussions than trade in carnations and coffee.
The stakes are high in South America. As the recent standoff in the Andes shows, the region is facing an increasingly stark choice. Quietly accept the vision of the terrorists and the demagogues, or to actively support democratic leaders like President Uribe. I've made my choice. I'm standing with courageous leadership that believes in freedom and peace.
The backdrop for all of this, of course, is the crisis set off earlier this month when Colombian President Álvaro Uribe sent commandos about a mile into Ecuador to attack an anti-government rebel encampment there. The March 1st raid, which was accompanied by a bombing campaign, succeeded in killing a top commander of the rebel group known as FARC, but it set off a diplomatic confrontation with neighbors Ecuador and Venezuela, who not only broke diplomatic ties with Colombia, but mobilized troops along the border. Although the rhetoric has since cooled, the raid exacerbated existing tensions both in the region and with the U.S., a strong ally of Colombia and a frequent critic of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Joining us to discuss all this is NPR correspondent Juan Ferrero. He's in Bogota, Colombia, and Cynthia Arnson, the director of the Latin American program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and she's kind enough to join me here in our Washington, D.C. studio. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. Hello.
Juan, Uribe had to know the cross-border raid would raise hackles. Why did he think it was worth it?
Because the Colombian government has been at war with the FARC, the main rebel group here, for more than 40 years. And during that time, they had never been able to hit one of the top members of the FARC leadership. There's a seven-member secretariat, as it's called. And they were able to locate Raul Reyes, but he was inside of Ecuador. You can imagine that what happened was that Uribe and his advisors discussed it and decided that it was better to go ahead and strike and pay the consequences later.
Was it worth it?
I think for the Colombians it was. They certainly feel it was. Uribe's popularity rose. He's now at 84% in this country. But more importantly is the strike against Raul Reyes culminates a year in which the military forces here have struck at various rebel commanders, mid-level commanders, in the past few months in successful raids and offensives and so forth. And so the government has been trying to control and push back the rebels, and they have had some success. And now with this strike, they feel that delivered a very serious blow that is going to generate more desertions and more problems within the FARC, which is actually going through quite a serious crisis right now.
And I understand that they also say they captured some key information. I'm going to ask you to tell us about that in just a few minutes. But first, I want to ask Cynthia, did the U.S. take a public position on this raid?
The United States government very strongly backed the Colombian government in striking against the FARC, and I think was, along with Colombia, really the only country that supported this military attack inside the territory of a neighboring country. All of the other Latin American leaders condemned the cross-border raid. Questions of military intervention are very, very sensitive in Latin America, given a long history of colonial domination and also of direct U.S. military intervention in the 19th and early 20th century. So this is a very sensitive issue.
It the U.S. support that made it sensitive, or just the fact of its happening at all?
The fact that that a Latin American country would violate the territorial integrity of another country touches a very raw nerve in Latin America. But you also have to ask, you know, if this was a violation of sovereignty, and if Ecuador itself is a sovereign country, doesn't it have the obligation to control what goes on within its territory? And I think sometimes that aspect of sovereignty and of the duty of a sovereign state vis-a-vis control of what goes on within its borders has gotten lost in the debate.
Did Ecuador respond to this? One would assume that President Uribe would have made that point, that these are rebels who are using his territory to launch attacks on his country. What do they say to that?
The Ecuadorians have claimed that they have made a great deal of effort to patrol the border. It's an extremely difficult area to control. It's Amazon jungle, it's mountain, and the border itself is over 300 miles. And the Ecuadorian army is not interested in getting drawn into a kind of military conflict with Colombia or with the FARC guerrillas. And I think it's made some effort, but according to the Colombians, and I think according to many governments privately, they have not made enough of an effort.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the recent clash in Latin America with NPR correspondent Juan Ferrero and Cynthia Arnson of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Juan, as we mentioned earlier, the Colombians are saying that they captured some key information in the course of this raid. What was it, and what do they think it tells them?
Well, the information that they found in the rebel camp, because what happened first was that they bombed the camp, and then they sent commandos into Ecuadorian territory to bring back the FARC commander's body. Once they got into the camp, they found various computers. They found three computers and two hard drives, and they've had technicians working on those. What they found were basically correspondence among top rebel commanders, five or six different commanders, including the commander who was killed. And they talk about a lot of issues. They talk about problems with radios. They talk about life in the jungle. They also talk a lot about Hugo Chavez. The FARC has been in negotiations with the Venezuelan government to release hostages that are held by that rebel group. And so there's a lot of correspondence where they talk about the meetings that they have had with Chavez. And there's also a number of documents where they talk about possible assistance from Chavez. They're a bit vague. They're a little bit difficult to read, and some of them are in code. But there's a number of documents where there's discussions about what kind of assistance they're going to receive, and they talk about a quote-unquote 300, which intelligence officials here believe was $300 million. This has angered very much the Venezuelan government, which has denied that these documents exist or that they're authentic, I should say, and has called them lies and fabrications. So that's been another point of contention in the last few days.
Now, actually, U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice expressed concern about this evidence, and she's been asked about whether the State Department is considering putting Venezuela on the list of state sponsors of terror. Has that discussion arisen as a result of this information, Cynthia? And is that realistic? And what would be the implications of that?
Well, I think there's certainly pressure, and members of Congress have been very outspoken in pressing the Bush administration to declare the Venezuelan government a government that supports or that is a state supporting terrorism. If that were to happen, there would be a number of automatic sanctions that would be in place, including financial sanctions. But I think in the State Department, there's been a reluctance to go down that road, at least immediately. And I think the consequences would be very negative for U.S. interests in the region. I think there's nothing that would help President Chavez more than than what he would describe as a further aggression from the United States. He sees the world in terms of both internal and external enemies. He has suffered a very significant political defeat internally last December with the defeat of a constitutional referendum. He's under increasing criticism because of very acute food shortages of basic foodstuffs, despite the country's enormous oil wealth. And I think there's nothing that would rally the Venezuelan public more behind Chavez or allow him to manipulate public opinion than a very strong action by the U.S. government. And I think the best route will be to continue to work multilaterally, the Organization of American States, the Rio group that met last weekend in the Dominican Republic, these other Latin American leaders have, I think, been extremely effective in defusing the crisis. And I think it would be a very big mistake for the United States to go it alone and paint Venezuela as a rogue state and once again be way, way out front and out of step with other allies in the region.
You mentioned that President Uribe this was a popular move within Colombia. But, you know, FARC has a long history of taking hostages, some of whom they keep for years. And I just wondered whether there is any discussion about whether this raid, it may have been a military success, or how is it being perceived in the context of these ongoing negotiations to try to recover some of these hostages?
Well, I think it's perceived as not a very good thing for the hostages. The commander who was killed, Raul Reyes, was the lead point guy in terms of negotiations on the hostages. He was the public face of the FARC, the spokesman for the FARC, if you will. And in the last couple of months, the FARC has released 6 hostages to the Venezuelans. I'm sure that what they're thinking is, look, we release 6 guys and 6 hostages, and you kill our top negotiator. So I don't think that there's going to be any action on the hostages soon. Having said that, Hugo Chavez has publicly said that he's going to continue to work to try to win the release of hostages. And the FARC, which is very much despised in this country, may release some hostages in the future to try to win some political space, which is basically what they use the hostages for, to win political space, to stay current, to stay relevant. So that is a possibility. Having said that, they're not going to anytime soon, I think, release Ingrid Betancourt, the French-Colombian politician and author who's the best-known hostage, or the 3 American Pentagon contractors who have been held by the FARC since 2003.
So just briefly, Juan, if you would, what's the state of what's the atmosphere there? Is it one of, I mean, you heard earlier Chavez saying that, you know, war is possible, and I understand that there's a feeling that that is not really the case. It's more sort of saber rattling. But what is the atmosphere there?
Well, I think the atmosphere during the crisis was one of support for the Colombian government in Colombia. I think that people didn't quite understand why Hugo Chavez was getting involved in this, since it was Ecuador whose sovereignty had been violated. But Chavez has been increasingly antagonistic toward Colombia. He calls Uribe a mafia boss and a lapdog of the Americans and a criminal. These are all public comments that are very very much the state of the relationship between the two countries, and Chavez is constantly doing that in speeches and so forth. And so, you know, people, in a sense, expected that Chavez would somehow get involved, but they were very much surprised that Chavez decided to put troops on the border.
Okay. All right.
That was something that was surprising to this country.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. NPR correspondent Juan Ferrero joined us from Bogota, Colombia. We were also joined by Cynthia Arnson of the Latin American Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars here in Washington. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.